Greg Iles is next. He was born in Germany in 1960. His father ran the U.S. Embassy Medical Clinic during the height of the Cold War. Greg spent his youth in Natchez, graduated from Ole Miss, and while attending the school at Oxford, he lived in the cabin where William Faulkner and his brothers listened to countless stories told by Mammy Callie, their beloved nanny, who's been had been born a slave. Greg studied the novel under Willie Morris, who brought in friends William Styron, James Dickey, John Knowles, and many others to enrich his classes. He is now one of the most prominent writers in the world, and we'll talk with him after this time out. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and quite a pleasure to talk again with Greg Iles. And he is joining us from his hometown of Natchez, the oldest city on the Mississippi River, and his work is based in his home state of Mississippi, and the latest is Cemetery Road, bound to be another overwhelming bestseller, and already some amazing plaudits for Greg Iles, who continues to write with the best in the world. And for those who are ready to absorb this book, which is about 600 pages, I think all you have to do is read the opening passage and you'll be hooked. Greg, do you have the book with you?
I just opened it up, Jim.
Okay, well, let's hear the first few words from Cemetery Road.
First few words, the chapter is two paragraphs. Here we go. Chapter 1, I never meant to kill my brother. I never set out to hate my father. I never dreamed I would bury my own son, nor could I have imagined that I would betray the childhood friend who saved my life or win a Pulitzer Prize for telling a lie. All these things I have done, yet most people I know would call me an honorable man. I wouldn't go that far, but I try to be a good man, and most of the time I believe I succeed. How is this possible? These are complicated times, and it's not easy to be good.
A powerful opening from Greg Iles, who is a master storyteller, and this one involves a journalist, a fascinating man. Tell us about Marshall.
Well, you know, Jim, I've realized that I write thrillers, but I don't have standard thriller heroes. I don't usually follow cops or spies or people like that. I tend to follow people who are more like you and me, people who are reading the books, you know, and I think some of the smartest people in the world are in those regular jobs. Marshall McEwen is a guy from Mississippi, a small town. He's in a situation that a lot of people are that came from little towns in Mississippi, Louisiana, all over the South. He left home when he was young. He went off to the big city, and he became very successful. But he's forced to return home like a lot of people our age. I'm finding my age, around my age, younger and older, because one of his parents is terminally ill. The other parent can't handle it, and so he has to go from the midst of his success in Washington, D.C., back to a little town and try to run his father's newspaper until he passes away. So he's doing something he doesn't really want to do, and he doesn't do it with any idea of becoming a hero or anything like that. But when he comes back to his little town, he finds out it's no longer the little town he grew up in. And I think anybody in your listening radius knows what that's like, you know?
This story is set in Bienville, Mississippi.
It is. Bienville is, for, you know, normally I've set my recent books, particularly the trilogy that has to do with civil rights murders and the Klan and all that, I set that in real Natchez, Mississippi, and Concordia Parish, Louisiana. In this case, I wanted, for the first time in a while, I wanted a fictional town. It gives you a little more freedom. You know, when you're setting things in a real town, or, you know, say Concordia Parish, you know, I'm using historical characters, and I'm blending that with things that are made up, and I'm using real facts, and boy, you're really skirting the line of what's permissible all the time. You have to be very careful. And so in this case, because I was dealing with very sensitive type personal secrets, I just wanted a fictional town. So I created a little town between Natchez and Vicksburg. Now, you know, people outside our little corner of the world, that probably doesn't make, you know, they don't really know where that is. But for people around here, it's a place a lot like Natchez, but also different. And as you know, it's a town that's struggling. And that's the thing I really find, Jim. That was one thing that prompted this book. I've watched the the towns along the Mississippi River, starting in Natchez and going up to Vicksburg and Greenville and up in Clarksdale, all the way up, you know. Those towns have suffered so much in the last 30 years. They've shrunk so much. Things have changed. And it's made the people desperate when an offer of salvation comes. And, of course, in this book, it comes in the form of a Chinese paper mill. And, of course, in Natchez, you know, for years and years, International Paper was our chief employer. So the idea that we could get that kind of regular paycheck back for people is a powerful thing, and they're going to react very negatively to somebody who endangers that.
I know you have been influenced, and you have influenced our friend Stanley Nelson, and you write about journalists, and it goes without saying, but sometimes journalists put themselves in harm's way when they're reporting on things like you write about, and I think in this case, Marshall is in that number.
He is, and you're right, Jim. I mean, I know sometimes you stray into the political, and I do too. I try to avoid it. You know, we get the angry calls when we do that. But the time that we're living in, especially not just in the United States but worldwide, I think journalism has suddenly once again become maybe the most important profession, you know, outside of the things that keep the world ticking, like engineering and stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. People who are in that job, they are assassinated, they are beaten, they are jailed, and they are, you know, locally we hope that doesn't happen in the United States, but they certainly can come under many forms of pressure, and Marshall does. And I think he probably underestimates the degree to which his town is controlled by people he didn't realize. You know, growing up in Natchez, that's one thing I learned, was that the official seats of power in any city, I don't care if it's a tiny little parish in Louisiana or if it's boroughs in New York City, the people who hold the official seats of power, the mayor, the councilman, the alderman, etc., that's not where the real power is. It never has been. The real power lies with guys with money. Sometimes in the South, it's families that don't have as much money, but they have the old blood and the influence and the connections, you know, in the state capital, et cetera. And so that's the world Marshall is in. He's trying to navigate waters where he doesn't really know who's in control. And not to run on, but I gave it a name in this book, you know. Groups like that don't always have a name. Usually it's hunting buddies or golfing buddies or poker buddies. In this case, they're called the Bienville Poker Club, and their fathers and grandfathers go all the way back to the wake of the Civil War when they were resisting the Yankees, and they sort of secretly took control of the town, the banking and the politics and all that, to resist Reconstruction. And so they really control everything that happens. And you know, you can see that in little towns in the South. It reminds me of, if you're familiar, the older readers will remember this, John D. McDonald's Travis McGee. Travis McGee used to run into this kind of thing in the towns he would work in.
There's probably more than a little of you in Marshall McEwen. Not McLuhan, but McEwen.
There is. Yeah, he's a little bit of a crusader. He's not, if you, people will notice, he's pretty different from my hero from the trilogy, Penn Cage, in a couple ways. First of all, Penn Cage was almost too good, more of a hero than normal people are, I think. I thought of him as something of a Boy Scout, whereas Marshall, I think, has become cynical by working in Washington, and he understands corruption. He knows how the world works now that he's older. And then the second thing, of course, is that Penn Cage was raised by a guy a lot like my dad, a beloved physician, a guy who had a strong moral code, and they were close from birth all the way till death, whereas Marshall and his father have nearly not spoken in 30 years. And that goes back to the fact that, I don't want to give away too much, but Marshall's brother died when he was when Marshall was 14 years old. And let's just say it has to do with the Mississippi River, and anybody who lives along the river knows how easily that can happen. But Marshall's father blames him for his brother's death, and because of that, Marshall just got out when he was 18. He swore he'd never come back, but he's forced mm-hmm. to do it by the fact that his father's sick. And so, you know, I think people hope, again, I don't want to give away too much, people hope that there'll be reconciliation before the father passes. And I think the father's a pretty tough guy, too. To me, he's sort of a sad character in that in the 60s, he was looked at as a hero nationally. He's based on kind of a blend of certain journalists from that period in Mississippi. And but then he became an alcoholic, and he pretty much stayed that the rest of his life. You know, it's not a pretty story. It's a guy who had a few glory years, and really now he's kind of that cranky guy who writes editorials and, you know, makes people mad at him, you know.
The book is Cemetery Road, and Greg, by the way, will be in Baton Rouge at the Barnes & Noble City Place, I believe, on Friday, March 15th. That's at 6 o'clock. So in a few weeks, you can bring your book, and you can meet this fine gentleman who is a man who's quite proud of his home state and his university, Ole Miss. But as we know, the Confederacy and now the Ku Klux Klan, they have remnants in your state and ours, and it was in evidence recently at Ole Miss when the basketball team protested. What's your take on this as we finish our conversation, Greg?
Well, Jim, I was happy to see somebody was live tweeting that, and they said things are about to crank up here in Oxford. We have 18 Ku Klux Klan demonstrators. So I thought 18 is I think society can probably tolerate 18 of them. I'm glad to see that it wasn't a big event and big turnout. You know, this is a complicated thing for people in the South. People's emotions are tied up in it. And I've gotten into this. You know, John Grisham and I organized a lot of writers, artists, SEC coaches, et cetera, to try to get the Confederate flag removed from the Mississippi flag. We're the last state to have it. And, you know, we upset some people doing that. And people tend to think, oh, you know, you're not proud of your heritage, et cetera. Look, I'm descended from Confederate combat veterans on both sides.
Well, we do have to roll, but congratulations again to Greg Iles for Cemetery Road. Back tomorrow.